Blog Talk Radio.
Mathis, I'm your host for CMT Firestorm. We are live from the CMT Firestorm Studios here in Tampa, Florida. We're going to give you raw, uncut, unedited, objective analysis on major college and pro football. First, I'm going to introduce my panel. Cali Mike, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Let's have a good show today. A lot to talk about.
All right. Big Tex, what's up?
What's going on?
All right. Chi-Town Mike, what's going on? Chi-Town Mike, you there? Maybe some connection issues with Chi-Town Mike right now. But today we have a very – let me go to the show. Today we have a very special guest, Mr. LaVon Kirkland. He's a former player in the NFL who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Seattle Seahawks, and the Philadelphia Eagles. He played in two Pro Bowls. He was a two-time All-Pro, NFL Linebacker of the Year, two-time Steelers MVP, a Super Bowl 30 appearance, NFL 1990s All-Decade Team. He's a consensus All-American for the Clemson Tigers. Let me welcome in. Without further ado, I give you Mr. LaVon Kirkland. Mr. Kirkland.
What's up, guys?
How's it going? Thank you for coming on the show, first and foremost. I guess my first question is, being an NFL, a very good NFL player, how was your life in the NFL? What was your highs? What were your lows?
Well, you know, it was just really a pleasure and an honor to be in the NFL. It was a childhood dream of mine. You know, some of the highs were playing with some of the best players. Rod Woodson, Damani Dawson, Greg Lloyd, Kevin Green, Chad Brown, guys of that nature. And, you know, I think the lows are when you're at your, you know, your career and you realize that this dream is almost over with. But, you know, I would have to say 95% of my time in the NFL was very positive.
All right. As far as your experiences in the NFL go, I just want to say I am a Cowboys fan, by the way. But I watched you coming up. You're an excellent player. Admire the way you played. When I used to go to the training camps, I used to see Eric Williams and Charles Haley just go at it. I mean, just classic battles, better than anything you would ever see in the game. It was just extremely violent. When you guys were in training camp, were there any battles like that?
Yeah, we had some battles. Actually, me and Jerome Bettis would never go against each other because we didn't want to bang each other. But, of course, there were some great battles. You know, I had to go against guys like Damani Dawson, you know, fullback Timmy Lester had to go against those guys, Dan Kreiner when he played. So, there are always class battles because you got athletes that are just trying to compete for jobs. You got guys who are, you know, trying to earn a livelihood. So, of course, those jobs and those battles and practices are going to be pretty tough.
Okay. Hey, how's it going, Levon? This is Mike.
What's up, Mike?
I'm doing just fine. I'm a really big fan of yours. As a fellow big man, no problem. As a fellow big man, I just want to say that you must have had, like, every high school coach in America going crazy because you had every big man trying to play middle linebacker. And I'm wondering, how did you get to that spot at that size?
You know, actually, when I came into college, I wasn't a very big guy in the first place. I was maybe 205. As the years came along, and I never lift weights until basically I got to the college level. Got in there, really started lifting, and actually playing with the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, I had to take on a lot of guards and tackles and tight ends and, you know, meet fullbacks in the hole. So, you know, I needed a little bit more of an advantage. And fortunately for myself, I was a pretty quick player and really kept the feet going pretty well. But, you know, my size actually turned into my advantage. So, you know, as I got bigger, you know, people, my coaches realized that I still can play at that size and still run around. So it wasn't that I was always a big man. It's kind of something that kind of gradually came on throughout the years.
Interesting.
What's going on, Mr. LeVon Kirkland? Honorable
Jerry, what's going on, buddy?
I know you heard my buddy Tex is a Cowboy fan. I was not much to say.
Yes.
That 95 Steelers team, you know, I think you all was that defense of you all was pretty good, but, you know, I think you all, you know, had the Cowboys, but, you know, play at quarterback cost you that Super Bowl because I think the Steelers were better. But anyway, you know, in the era of football now, what do you think, like the direction where it's headed to, or you think you could play in this era the way the game is going right now?
Well, you know, I always think that I can play that any era, to be honest with you, because, you know, the game really comes down to attitude and confidence. And, you know, I always think things are relative. You know, I think, you know, if we have the training as these guys have, you know, it would be the same. So I think every, you know, every decade is different. But I think the guys is still made up of guys that are that have desire, guys that are willing to do what's necessary to win, like smart, dedicated men. And I think if you're that, you have an opportunity to play. I don't really look at it as a talent thing or somebody's naturally gifted. I think of guys who make it to the NFL and who do well in the NFL are diligent workers. So I feel like in the era because of my work ethic that I would have made it.
I guess my question is there a player, because Callie Mike was saying, you are known for your size at that position. Is there a player today that reminds you of yourself that's in the league right now?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't really know his name, but he's the inside linebacker for the Giants, number 93. He actually reminds me a lot of myself, especially my younger days.
Number 93, wow. I don't even know who that is.
But yeah, I know.
Matthias Kiwanuka?
He's an inside linebacker.
Inside linebacker, number 93 for the Giants. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I actually forget his name, but he's the one guy that definitely reminds me of myself. You know, it's kind of hard to find guys like me that play that play in this era now.
All right, this is Jamal. I have one question that I had for Brenton Bugner last week. You look at the league today, you know, we know about the tight ends, we know about the offenses, we know about the quarterbacks and the amount of pub they get, what they mean to the team. I absolutely believe that you must have an elite quarterback to win a Super Bowl, unless you are the 2000 Ravens or the 2002 Buccaneers. Do you believe that you must have the quarterback, or can you win with defense? nowadays, or does it have to be a once-in-a-generation type defense to make a run?
You have reached the maximum time permitted to record. To send your message, press 1 at any time.
Hello?
To listen to your message,
yeah,
press 2.
Here.
To re-record, press 3. For more
record.
Options, press 4. To cancel, press star.
Something's happening. I'm sorry. Are you there, Mr.
Okay.
Kirkland?
Yeah, I'm here. The question was, do you need a lead quarterback?
To send your
too?
Message, press 1 at any time. To listen
okay.
to your message,
who's
press 2. To re-record, press 3. For more options, press 4.
No,
to
it's
cancel,
not Mike. It's someone
press
else.
Star.
So I need
Hello?
To press star. Yes. So I need to press star so I can cancel. But anyway, you know, it's been proven that you can win without a outstanding quarterback. But I would think most likely it would be difficult if you didn't have a trigger guy that was a great trigger guy. I think it's essential because. You know, you need a guy. That guy has the ball. He's actually the most important position on the field. And you just need him to be able to guide you when things are not really going towards, going according to plan. So I really feel that a lead quarterback and having a good trigger man is very key to win the Super Bowl.
Okay. LaVon, I kind of want to switch gears here. You are a South Carolina guy, Clemson guy, born and bred. When Marcus Lattimore committed to play for the University of South Carolina, there was a lot of publicity about that because a lot of people wanted him to go there because of certain racial issues that were going on in the state at that time with the Confederate flag being flown on the campus, I guess. And, I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think football and athletes should have basically anything to do with those kind of politics?
You know, honestly, I think when you're that young of a player, you're just not as aware of what's going on in the world. Your whole identity is playing football. You just want to get to that next level. That's all you've been thinking about. That's all you've been dreaming about. That's why you play as hard as you play to get to that level. I just think that maybe a lot of guys are not aware of some of the social issues that go on. And then also I think that athletes are treated a little differently, whether you're black or white. I think that the masses treat you differently as a player. They may not treat you like they may treat other African-Americans or other people. So I think a lot of times, especially elite athletes like Marcus Lattimore, he may not get that same kind of treatment, or he may not witness racism as it occurs because he's just not, it's not really in his world because everybody is adoring him because of his great ability. So I think it's kind of unfair if you put it on an athlete because I think a lot of times, you know, being a young man and you know, going through that whole process, and a lot of times you're so focused on your game and trying to be the best that you could possibly be that you're not really concerned about a lot of other issues.
Shaitan, you want to ask a question?
Oh, yeah, yes. I'm back. Some technical difficulties, I'm back. I didn't get y'all to answer. I know Jamal was asking about the elite quarterback, you know, can you win with the elite, having an elite quarterback, or have do you still think having a dominant defense is your way to go to the Super Bowl? I was gonna say again. I know you're gonna hear it again. You know, I think if the quarterback play in the year you was in the Super Bowl was better, I think the Steelers would have won that Super Bowl. So I kind of still think you have to have a quarterback, a solid quarterback.
I think that was true. I mean, I think Neil at the time was a very efficient quarterback. You would never probably put him on your best quarterback list. Yeah, I think at the time, unfortunately for Neil, he picked a bad day to have a bad day. those two interceptions were really crucial. Those two interceptions, especially against a good team like Dallas, actually hurt us a lot. It put us in a position that the defense was under stress and that we had to maybe defend a short field against a prolific offense, a big offensive line, great running back, great wide receiver, great quarterback, great tight end. So, I mean, when you put in that situation, it's already tough enough if you're, you know, if you got them backed up. But when they're at your five-yard line, you know, about to put it in, it's even tougher. So I think those interceptions put us in a tough situation. You know, if we would have had Dan Marino, maybe it would have been a little different. We don't know. But I really believe from that point on, you know, especially after that game, that, you know, it's always nice to have the best guys. And if you can have a great quarterback and a great defense, it's a plus.
You seem like you're a little still upset about that, LeVon.
Well, you know, it's something that you never forget. I think, you know, honestly, it's something that you always, you think about every day. You really do. I mean, there's no grudge. It's just that you think about, man, you know, you're that close to win, you know, being a world champion. And that's going to stick with me for the rest of my life. You know, it won't hinder me from moving forward, but it definitely is there.
Well, hey, you were there, and millions of people wish they could have been there. That's how I look at it, man. But I got a question before Tex.
It was definitely an experience.
I got a question before Tex does. Do you still keep in touch with or whatever happened to, like, Greg Lloyd, Barry Foster, Bam Morris, those type of I know Kevin Green, I think, is a coach in the NFL right now, with the Packers, I think it is. I'm not exactly sure who.
Yeah, he's a linebacker for the Packers.
But – like, whatever happened to, like, specifically Greg Lloyd, you know, whatever happened to him? Do you know where he's at by chance?
Oh, yeah. You know, matter of fact, I talked to Greg last week, and I saw him maybe 3 weeks ago. We did an autograph session together. And, you know, Greg is doing well. You know, he has his dojos. You know, he's a master as far as Taekwondo is concerned. So he does a lot of teaching. He's in Georgia. I think he's did some internships, just like I've done as far as the NFL level. So, you know, we keep in touch. You know, we text each other every once in a while. And I have to tell you, if you mind, Greg Lloyd, in my opinion, belongs in the Hall of Fame. I believe that Greg Lloyd was he was a fantastic linebacker. And the great thing that I really appreciate about Greg was you had to play at a level that he played on. If he didn't play on that level, he was going to tell you about it. And he was going to let you know that you were not up to snuff, as they say in the South. So he played at a level that he played at such a high level that you had to play on that level. And I really appreciate it because it made me a better player. And I think the guys that, you know, looked up to him felt the same way. Now, sometimes he wasn't the nicest man in the world, but you appreciate what he brought to the table.
All right. I know you spent this is Jamal. I know you spent the great portion of your career with the Pittsburgh Steelers, but just take us back to your days in Philadelphia. Tell us about Jim Johnson and Brian Dawkins, Hugh Douglas, and all those guys that were on that Eagles defense, which, I mean, you guys had some dogs. So just go ahead and tell us a little bit about that.
You know, that was an adjustment for me because, you know, actually that year I was going to play for Seattle, ended up getting waived by Seattle, going to Philly really within 2 weeks of training camp. So, it was a situation for me where I thought, you know, maybe this is my last raw. And, you know, they actually had me going in, and they wanted me to compete for the starting position. And, you know, it was a long time since I competed for that position, but I ended up being a starter. You know, I thought Jimmy Johnson was a very good defensive coordinator. I thought Jimmy knew the game very well. I think that he had an aggressive, you know, mindset. Now, to be honest with you, me and Jimmy didn't always get along, you know, because it was my first year. I don't think he really trusts me at first. You know, I had to have a little talk with him about, hey, trust me to play the game. I played the game before. You know, they had Trotter there. They had a great linebacker. So although we didn't always get along greatly, I really, really respected Jimmy. And I thought he was an excellent defensive mind. You know, Brian Dawkins was a different player. You know, Brian kind of put him in the category of Greg Lloyd, where, you know, he played so hard. He played with so much passion and so much love for the game. that it was contagious. And I think he made you play at another level. You know, me and Hugh, we got along pretty well. I was kind of the older statesman there. And playing with guys like Hugh, he was like a little brother. I mean, he was hilarious, very funny, had a great personality. But I was able to kind of tease him a little bit more because I was, you know, I played in the league a little longer than he has. But that was a great defense that we actually had. We actually played pretty well on defense. I think, you know, as I look back on it, going into that NFC Championship game, you know, the team was tight, you know, and I've been around for a while. You kind of could feel that they wanted to win so bad. And, this, you know, all the stakes were in. And, you know, a lot of times when you play in that game, you really have to kind of take a step back. And sometimes I feel that game is better played when you're the away team, when you don't have the distractions of, you know, people asking for Super Bowl tickets, things of that nature. And I thought that we were a little immature as far as a team going into a big stage like that. But it was a great time. I had a good time. It definitely energized me as a player, and I liked playing for that defense. It was fast-paced. It was kind of get after it. It kind of worked for me.
Now, it seems like playing with the Steelers, you know, it seems like they're one of the, you know, they're one of the head organizations, one of the top organizations in the NFL. It seems like they really don't get, you know, sign the big free agents, but they draft very well. And it, you know, and it just seems like they're, you know, they're kind of set apart from different, you know, franchises in the way they handle themselves. What is the culture of playing with the Steelers versus playing with these other teams that you notice?
Well, first and foremost, they have great tradition, you know, and as you probably, is it well documented, they weren't the greatest team until, you know, the 70s came along. Me and Joe Green kind of started up. But I tell you what, on the defensive side alone, you know, especially playing at the linebacker position, there was just a tradition of linebackers. I think there's been over, I don't know the number of Pro Bowlers that played linebacker there that's been there. So, I mean, just from my perspective, it was a lot of guys that paved the way and kind of showed you how to be a professional football player first and foremost, also to be a Steeler and what that meant. And it meant something. You know, that was the thing. It meant something. As far as their organization is concerned, I thought they always try to build through the draft and, you know, went free agency as far as needs were concerned. They never draft for needs. They draft the best player available, and then whatever need they had, I think they usually went out in free agency and kind of got that need. So when I was there, they got guys like John L. Williams, Kevin Green, Yancey Big Ten. There were needs, and they plugged those needs in with the free agency. But their core players were always guys that they drafted, guys that they kept for, you know, a extended period of time, guys who came in there and being taught the Steeler spirit, you know, how to be a Steeler. So I think that's the thing that carries on. You get your young guys and you cultivate those guys and you groom those guys to be Steelers. And then you bring in guys for need. You bring in professionals that have done it before for those need positions. But it seemed like their formula was always draft the core guys, who are Steelers, like Ben Roethlisberger, your Troys, Palomalo. I mean, guys like that, those guys are Steelers. Hines Ward, those guys are Steelers. You know, you get those guys, and they're always going to keep your foundation going. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest difference that you see with those guys. And they always kind of have that formula, and that formula's been working for them for quite some time.
Well, Mr. Levine, when your days as a Steeler, I know you played under Bill Cowher. Some would say that, you know, he should be a Hall of Fame head coach, where I kind of disagree because some think he is. And with your take on that, do you think he's a Hall of Fame head coach? And also, too, I know you played under, you know, Hall of Famer, you know, Dick LeBeau. He was your defensive coordinator there. And how was that, you know, experience, you know, him being your head coach, being your defensive coordinator?
Well,
would you agree that, I'm sorry.
No problem. I got the gist of the question. I think that Bill is a very good coach. I think as a young player, you love a Bill Cowher because he kind of reminds you of a college coach. No question, he knew how to mold a team. Do I think he's a Hall of Fame coach? Probably not, in my opinion. Probably not. He may go to the Hall of Fame, but in my opinion, he wasn't a Hall of Fame coach. Now, if you think about Dick LeBeau was an innovator. He changed the game. And that's a big difference when you talk about coaches, guys who change the game, you know, something that you write about. You know, books have been done about Dick LeBeau and the Fire Zone concept. And I think that's the difference between, you know, Dick LeBeau and a Bill Cowher. Bill Cowher was a good coach. He maintained a good Steelers tradition. Matter of fact, he came in and he kind of changed that culture around. You know, he kind of made it a tough team again. But the thing that I think Dick LeBeau did was Dick LeBeau changed the game. He was an innovator, a pioneer in what he did. Man, when you have a guy who does that, it's tough to beat. And I think that's why I think that's why you see a Dick LeBeau in the, in the Hall of Fame. Why all his players that ever played under him, especially the Steelers that I know, they revered him because he was such a, you know, not only a good coach but a caring man. He knew he cared about you. He treated you like a man. He gave you the opportunities, and his defense, man, was so good. And he was so good at calling plays and also adjusting. He just had his pulse on the game, and he was a little bit before his time. So when you have a guy like that, you know you're under him, and I'm so thrilled that he knows who I am. I mean, really am. So you know, I think that's the difference when you talk about a Hall of Famer and then you talk about a guy who was a very good coach, but I don't think quite a Hall of Famer.
Okay, I got two questions. One question from me and then the other question is from a guy on the chat room.
Yes, sir.
The first question is, you seem like you're kind of a guy that's not afraid to hold his tongue. What player bothered you the most when you played? And then the second question is going to be completely different. It's from the chat person on the chat room. Where do you rank Ray Lewis in regards to the middle linebackers? That's what the question from the chat room is.
Okay, sure. Yeah. A player that kind of got on my skin a little bit. There wasn't a whole lot of guys. Well, I think for me, a lot of times, the guys that got on my skin, you know, personally, were guys who were hype guys. You know, guys, I've seen guys who kind of, you see it more today than it was back then, but I think guys who were, you know, definitely self-promoters a little bit. And
like a Deion Sanders, maybe?
No, I like Deion Sanders because Deion Sanders was a player. I'm thinking of guys who wasn't as quite as good as put them out to be. I would think, you know, one guy that I actually do like, it's not that I don't like these guys, but I think they were maybe a little overrated in ways. I think that maybe I look at Eddie George, and I think that Eddie George kind of rolled the Heisman a little bit. It's not Eddie's fault. I think Eddie worked hard, but I don't think Eddie was as great of a runner as he was portrayed to be sometimes.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Well, you asked me.
Hey, bring it all out there. I like that.
Like I said before, I like Eddie George. I mean, me and Eddie had some battles, man. We went after Eddie. But in a lot of ways, I didn't think Eddie was as good. Maybe the Jason Seahorn. I think Jason might have been a little bit more hyped than he was. You know what I mean? You know, everybody who gets to that level is a pretty good player. I just think that some players, they get a little bit more They get a little bit more pop than it really should. And maybe it was the New York thing. Maybe it was his race. You know, being a Caucasian.
You wanted to say his race first. Just admit it, man. You wanted to say his race first. That's what you meant to say.
All right, man.
I won't put words in your mouth, man. So, hey,
okay.
We got you.
guys who got more pub than they really deserve. I mean, like I go for instance, Greg Lloyd to me was one of the most fantastic players there was. But you know what? Just do, man. This guy was an incredible player, one of the best players in the 90s. And, you know, I think people who knew the game gave him his pub, but man. Like it was ferocious, man. But you see other guys doing commercials, and it kind of baffles you a little bit. But anyway, we can move forward.
Let's move on forward. This is the last round of questions. And Ray Lewis, the one with the Ray Lewis. Where do you put Ray Lewis in the tie in regards to middle linebackers?
I think Ray is an excellent middle linebacker. Probably, I think if you don't say the top two, you might be in trouble. but I put him in there, and I look at Ray. I think Ray was pure passion. You know, I think Ray, his sure will, his work ethic just puts him as probably the best middle backer there was. I know people say Dick Butkus, but you know, I didn't really see Dick Butkus play. I knew Dick Butkus was a heck of a player, but I don't think he did. You know, and it wasn't called for him to do those things. And if he had to do them, I knew he probably could do them well. I just think Ray is, you know, he's the cream. He really is, man. He's one of the top guys. And you knew it coming in. You know, I saw him coming in, and he wasn't quite as polished, but you could tell that he was going to be an outstanding backer. And I really always liked Ray. I always thought that Ray was, even though, you know, he played the same position I played, and, you know, there's always not too many spots on that Pro Bowl thing, you know, you got to give the man his props. I mean, you got to love people who work hard and have a certain passion toward the game. And I think that's what it was, man. That was his secret, man. It wasn't a secret, but the reason why I think he was so successful, it wasn't that I think he was just the most talented athlete ever. I just think that he just willed himself to be the greatest, and he set out to be the best. And, you know, he is.
Okay. All right. Tex, you got a question?
No hating there.
Yeah.
I don't hate
No, I don't. I don't have any more questions.
Callie, you got a question?
I'm good to go.
Shatan, you got a question?
I got a question. Who was the best offensive lineman you think played in your era? And also, who was the best, you know, lineman you went up against in practice? That always was tough. You know, he was saying, I'm glad he's my teammate.
Oh, wow. There's probably two guys, as far as my teammates are concerned, that I thought was extremely tough guys, and I was glad they were my teammates. One, you know, Damani Dawson, who's in the Hall of Fame this year, incredible player. One of the first guys I've seen at a center position that could actually snap the ball and also pull at the same time on a sweep. I mean, incredible player. Very athletic, almost like a linebacker at the center position. Very nice gentleman, but, man, would try to knock your head off. And then I played against a guy named Carl Hasserig, which you guys may not know a lot about Carl Hasserig, but Carl Hasserig never played college football, but he was a seven-time NCAA wrestling champion at the heavyweight level. And I'm telling you, he was only maybe 5'11". But, man, his leverage was so good. He was so quick. And, I mean, he just knew how to use his hands. And you talk about tough as nails, man. I hated going against him. Probably as far as other the opposing teams, you know, Bruce Matthews I thought was extremely good. Stefanowski did play for Dallas and a little bit with the Houston Oilers. He was an excellent player, but probably the guy was Randall McDaniel from the Minnesota Vikings. He had an awkward stance, but, you know, that dude can play, and he was an outstanding player. And I think that's the reason why that, you know, he was in the Hall of Fame, man. So, you know, and also, you know, Allen, you know, I think Eric Williams, the guy from Dallas, those guys were, you know, those guys were rough and tough, man. Those guys were no joke. So, you know, there's several guys you can name, but those are the guys that right now, off the top of my head, that I can think about that I thought, in my humble opinion, was the best players.
Okay, all right. Well, this is the last question. I wanted to talk about, like, I don't know if you saw that documentary a few weeks ago, Broke, 30 for 30. I got a question. Were a lot of players who you played with in that position, or did you know around the league, are in the positions, you know, they made all this money and then they're broke like 2-3 years after they leave the league?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, and you got to understand the whole environment of it. I think most guys, they're young. They're 20-something years old. They come from a low-income family. And, you know, when you come from being broke, now you're making maybe six figures, maybe even seven figures. There's really nobody that can counsel you about how to use that money. You know, they can tell you to save up. But what happens is, I think for most guys, it becomes like monopoly money. And it's a, you know, you're trying to compete with the Joneses. And I think they lose themselves. I think guys have lost themselves in that kind of situation. And, you know, just wasn't really wise about it. I would surely hope it will be better. And there's enough examples out there now that guys can see that and say, yeah, and realize how fortunate they are. But, you know, this world kind of makes us want to be consumers, you know. They sell so much. I mean, so much advertisement in magazines and television that I think when you're young like that, you don't have the perspective. I mean, I guarantee you if you ask the entertainment world, you know, how many people have gone from riches to rags, you know, it'd probably be a good percentage, especially the ones who started very young. I just think you don't have the perspective when you're young how to handle that money. You're not as smart as you are when you actually have got some season or you have, you know, been around. I think guys, like, you think about Peyton and Eli, they're so fortunate because their dad was in that situation, so they can draw from that whole experience. I think guys who may have had, you know, some counselors or some good mentors, you know, were able to adjust to that situation. But I think you think about most guys, you know, they just don't really have that education about money, and they don't know a whole lot about it. So, you know, you're putting a young man with a whole lot of money, and if that young man has a habit, that habit becomes even worse with the money. So I think it's a vicious cycle because you're getting that hungry young man who wants to make something of themselves. But once he gets there, he's making that money. You know, now how do you handle being high profile? How do you handle your family? You know, the people that are closest to you. I think a lot of times those are the ones who really sap your energy or sap your money. I mean, and you know, especially, you know, let's put it out there, the African-American families, you know, it's always, you know, that one make it, but everybody makes it. And, you know, as a young man, you want to take care of your family, and you want to make sure that they're secure because you're making so much money, and you feel like, man, I think some guys almost feel guilty for making that kind of money, and so they give back. But, you know, I think in a way guys were just not really well educated about the whole situation, and it's a sad thing. It really is. You know, I think for myself I was, you know, fortunate, and plus, you know, I have a wife who was extremely smart and definitely helped me, you know, in the situation. So You know, I was fortunate. I really was, you know, very fortunate. Some guys not as fortunate. And it's a shame, but it should happen to anybody. It really can. That could occur to anyone.
All right.
So you think the rookie symposium, if you had it at your time, you think that would have helped?
I don't know if it would have. I don't know if it would have. I mean, have you ever tried to talk to a 20-year-old millionaire and give them advice?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty tough.
Yeah.
I just think that I don't know if that would have helped. I mean, it would have helped some that would have took the time to listen. I'm sure it would have helped me, but you know, people ask me all the time, do you ever go back to talk to the Steelers? And I'm like, listen, man, it's hard to talk to a 20-year-old millionaire and give them advice. Because they're going to look at you like, I'm successful. What are you talking about? You played back in the 90s. What do you know? So I just think that it's tough when a young man has a lot of money to talk to that young man. Yeah, I think it's, I mean, some can do, you know, some young men are going to listen, definitely. Some guys are mature. And like I said now, I think guys now are smarter. I just think they're smarter, you know, because they got so many more examples. But I just think that you didn't have a whole lot of examples. You didn't have a lot of guys who were willing to, you know, give back to you. You had guys who could show you the ropes of the game. But as far as our personal life was concerned, you know, a lot of guys, you know, that was separate, you know. And you know how guys work. You know, we work, you know, it's one thing at a time. We operate one thing at a time. We could be having everything in the world going on around us, but we're in that football arena. We're going to play hard and, you know, we're going to forget. So a lot of guys, you know, it's just like being professional, you know. They didn't want to hear about your problems. I think now guys are more sensitive. Guys who have been there now are more sensitive, and they're willing to pour back into the pour back to the players now. So I think, you know, I think it's a little different now because, you know, you just have more examples of things happening, and guys can draw from those experiences.
Okay. I'm going to change the question. This is the last question I got.
Okay, sure. Sounds good.
Well, last question. Who do you think – you watch college football also?
Yes, I love college football.
Okay, who is the best team in college football, and who is the best team in the NFL? Who do you think it is?
Who's the best team in college football?
Yes.
Ooh, boy. I know what you think I'm going to say, but I'm going to say this. I'm going to say that I think Kansas State is probably
Oh, my goodness. You think Kansas State?
Yeah. Okay. The reason why I think Kansas State, I'm not going to say Kansas State because of the athletes per se. I'm saying Kansas State because of the coach they have. I think Coach Snyder is one of the best coaches ever coached. And I think that if you put him with any other team, that team would be perennial champions, not just one.
Oh, okay.
Those guys will be champions all the time. And without Coach Snyder, Kansas State is not as good. And I think what Kansas State is that, man, they're road warriors. They can go on the road, and they can beat teams. And a lot of college teams cannot do that. And I think that's the significant difference between what he brings to the table and maybe what other teams bring to the table. If you look at Alabama, teams like that, everybody's like, oh, wow. But, you know, Alabama is a machine, man. They're in the SEC, they give more money, they probably have more assistance. You know, Nick Saban is definitely a great coach. There's no question about it. But I like Kansas State because, first and foremost, they got a trigger man. They can make things happen. And they always play good defense, and they play a style of their style. It's just really good. But as far as the pros are concerned, ooh, that's a tough one. That's the funny thing about the NFL. You just never really know.
That's true.
At this point in time, you gotta give it up to the Falcons because they're undefeated. I don't know if they're the best team. I'm not sure if I'm a great believer in Matt Ryan. I think he's a good quarterback. I don't know if he's in the top tier of quarterbacks. I think his receivers, man, and I think what he has around him is pretty good. But you have to go with the Falcons right now because they're undefeated.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, okay. Well, thank you for coming on the show,
No problem. Thank you for having me.
We really appreciate it from CNT Firestorm. If you need us to do anything, help us out, help you out with anything, just let me know. You got my Facebook email or not. But
okay.
I appreciate you coming on the show. We're going to take a break now. We're going to let Mr. Kirkland go, and we'll be back with analysis on major college and pro football. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Hello?
Mm-hmm. It's Chase Blackburn. Chase Blackburn. I'll now so we'll be back up here. It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows. Weekend warriors toe to toe, football.
The old timers, do you remember the names like Bronco Nagurski and Night Train Lane, Bulldog Turner, my man Sam Huff, in the snow and the mud, they were still real tough, Crazy Leg Church, and remember Raymond Berry asked me if they hit hard, and I'll say Berry, Paul, Christian, Buddy, Young Lenny Moore, is them I adore, they seem to always score, Ed Sprinkle, defensive end for those years, Gene Big Daddy, Liston was the man to fear, you have Steve Van Buren, and Otto Graham, Johnny United had the arm of a Superman, we had Charlie Trippi, and Gino Marquette, if you're searching for a champion, they're your best bet. Which I could quarterback, like Johnny Lou Jack, or even Sid Luffin, as a matter of fact. Do you remember Red Brains, the galloping ghost? He could do a 95 running coast to coast. He had Norm Van Brocklin, a real great player, so swift with his moves that he could be mayor. Why ain't Tino Ali Madison? Hey, I remember all those guys from back in the day.
It's the sort of thing, better than diamond ring.
All right, we are back here, CNT Firestorm. We got a lot of stuff to talk about here. We're going to get into major college and professional football analysis. I guess the first question is, and I know we've all, particularly me and Tex, we've had disagreements this week. I guess I want to ask the panel, who are the top five teams in the country right now? As a matter of fact, I'm going to go first. You know what? I'm going to go first. Obviously, number one is Alabama. 1A, I have to put Oregon. I have to put Oregon up there with Alabama because of their defense. I think their defense is pretty good and their offense is pretty good. Number 2A, I'm gonna put the Florida Gators. Even though I think they're gonna lose to Florida State in Tallahassee. 2B, I guess I'll put Kansas State winning on the road against Oklahoma, beating West Virginia on the road the way they beat them. They're a legitimate team. And then number five, I will put Notre Dame in there. I'll put them at number five. I mean, it's kind of a toss-up between them and LSU. LSU, they don't have any offense right now. They have a dominant defense, obviously. They got the third-best defense in the country. But the offense is in question. So those are my top five teams right now. Let me start with you, Cali Mike.
In no particular order. I don't want to do any order right now. I have Oregon, Alabama, USC, Kansas State, and University of Florida. Those are the teams that have showed me that they can play. Like I said, I gotta go by what I see. And those teams have showed me they can play. You know, they showed me what they can do. And I think that those teams – right now, like I said, K-State is on the border, but, you know, just like the man said, you know, they got a lot of heart and they play well as a team. You know, I think that those teams right now, any of those teams can beat any other teams, I believe.
All right, Tex.
Yeah, I, too, don't have a particular order, but I'm going to say, let's say Alabama, Oregon.
No, hold on.
I want you to go in order.
I want to hear this order here. please go order. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you like that. I want to see an order, though, first.
In order?
Yes, in order. You can go 5-1 or 1-5. 5-1 or 1-5, Tex. I want to hear this.
Okay.
I want the world to hear this. I want the audience to hear what you're.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Number one, in Florida. Okay. You want
okay.
Number one, in Florida.
Texas, Florida, number one. Texas, Number two. Who's number two?
The Knicks was on four on day one, though, Clausell.
Number two, Oregon?
Number two, Oregon. Florida's number one. Oregon's number two. Who's number three?
Number three, Alabama. And that's
being Alabama's number three now. Wow. Okay. Number three, Alabama. Okay. And who's number four?
Number four is USC.
USC's number four. Okay.
Number five is Kansas State.
Oh, Kansas State. Okay. All right, you heard the audience now, right? All right, I've got two callers on the line waiting on you now. All right, Shottown, where you at? Who you got?
Well, except for one, everything else is no particular order. Number one, I'm going to have to go.
I want to hear your order, too.
He's still the champ. They still Alabama. That's number one. Number two, I mean, really, like I said, no particular order. I mean, you could say Florida being number two. And then number three, Oregon. I mean, that order, because they're right up there. It could be number two as well. Like I said, no particular order. Number four, K-State. And number five, I'll probably be a little surprised. I don't want him to come and get me. Say, man, nobody better not be talking about Mississippi State.
Oh, my goodness. You said Mississippi State is in the top five?
I put on the fire. They still undefeated, SEC.
They undefeated, but all right. I mean, I can see number 10 or number 11, but I don't see Mississippi State in the top five.
My goodness.
Hey, let's see what a caller has to say, our favorite person in the world here. 813.
No, he didn't. I almost choked when he said Mississippi State. Are you kidding me? All right. My top five is like this. Alabama is number one until somebody beats them. It's that simple. The Florida Gators are number two. LSU is number three. Why? Because the SEC is the best conference in the nation, and just because they lost to Florida does not mean that anybody else in this country can beat them.
Okay.
My number four is Oklahoma, and my number five is USC, because I told you the national championship is going to be between USC and Oklahoma, because all three of those SEC teams are going to knock each other off before the year is over.
Okay. All right.
So you think LSU is going to beat Alabama?
I am absolutely positive of it. LSU will beat Alabama in LSU next week. Write that down.
All right. We got it written down, even though Mettenberger can barely throw the ball.
Say it again next week. That will happen next week. Put it down. Antonio Watley on this date said it.
All right. We put it down.
Said it last week.
Yeah, you did. You said it last week. And I mean, I'm a fan of Alabama, but it's not going to be easy beating LSU down there. I think Alabama's going to win based on the quarterback play of LSU. I think he's not a manager. Like, compared to last year, they had a game manager. This year, LSU don't have no game manager. So, I mean, based off of that right there, I mean, it's going to be a low-scoring game. Alabama's barely going to score some points. But LSU's not going to be able to score any points. That's the issue right there, unless there's a big play in the secondary. And I don't see no player that can do that at LSU right now. So
but
I still got Alabama
LSU ain't
going
to let the same thing happen to them that happened in the national championship. That whole we didn't score a single point and they beat us without even scoring a touchdown shit stuff, it ain't going to happen.
Whatever they got to do,
they going to beat Alabama at LSU.
They're going to have to figure out something. All right.
That's one of the reasons why I don't have LSU in the top five right now, because their quarterback play been kind of shaky, you know. Right now, it's time to get it going. The BCS is out. It's October. I haven't seen nothing, you know. So, I mean, I kind of get what you're saying. They could, but right now, if I had to predict now, I'd say Alabama will be LSU at LSU. But it's going to be a battle, though, because, you know, it's hard to play in LSU, especially at night.
And I'm going to put you – oh, Tony, Wiley, I'm going to put you on hold. I got another caller here.
All right.
And I want to get into that he said USC versus Oklahoma. I kind of want to get into the Oklahoma-Notre Dame game this weekend. I want to see what y'all think about that. Hold on. Let me get this caller in. 334. CMT Firestorm. Are you there? 334. All right. We're going to have to put him on hold. Okay, here's another call here. 850.
All right. We're going on for the top five thing right quick. So I'm going to start off with Alabama. Like I said, they're defending national champions, and I'd say their offense, you know, pretty much top to bottom is better than they were last year. I'm not sure about the defense yet. Number two, I'm putting in Oregon. They got the offense, but they got a better defense, too. So that's the thing about Oregon. They have a better defense than they're used to having in the past previous year. Number three, I'm putting in Kansas State. They have to be two of the most impressive wins on the road. And I think that Oklahoma win will get more notoriety after Oklahoma beats Notre Dame on Saturday. Number four is Florida. They've had one of the top schedules in the country so far, and they're undefeated, so got to give them credit for that. And number five, I got to put up LSU. Thing about that game against Florida was they had their chances. They could have won that game. That fumble they had after Florida scored that first touchdown was key. So I buy them over Notre Dame and Oregon State.
Okay. I'm going to put you on hold. So, I mean, you heard the top five. I mean, I think everybody's still consistently, except for maybe Tex, has Alabama number one. And I kind of want to go back a little bit to what Watley was talking about in regards to, he said, USC, Oklahoma, and the national championship, and particularly with Oklahoma. Do you think Oklahoma in that Notre Dame game, what do you think is going to happen in that this weekend in that game?
Notre Dame is going to get blasted.
Do you think they're going to get blasted? With the defense, they're playing pretty good defense, Tex. I mean, I understand you're saying they play against the Big Ten.
Clauzel, they're playing good defense against who?
They played against the Miami Hurricanes.
The thing about Notre Dame that stands out to me is not their defense. If anything, I'd say it's their offense that will carry them. They're that deep, like I said, I'm not impressed by that defense at all. I'm really not impressed by Manny Taylor either, to tell you the truth. Like, you know, I think they're getting a lot of
what?
I think that defense is getting a lot of Notre Dame publicity, to tell you the truth.
Well, I mean, yeah, okay, I'll agree. There is – now, you say there's an SEC bias, Callie Mike. There is a Notre Dame bias. Now, you got to – is the Notre Dame bias is a little bit higher than the SEC bias. Now, you gotta go there now. Even though Notre Dame hasn't been relevant, but even though they look like they could be relevant, they're going to pump Notre Dame up. We all can agree with that a little bit, you know, because NBC, Catholic Church, whatever you want to say. But, I mean, in regards to this game, though, Oklahoma has the talent – but you always kind of have to think with Bob Stoops. I mean, he's not a great big game guy. You know, all those national championship games he was in, he only won one. You know, last year, lost to Texas Tech. He always has some game early this year, Kansas State. You know, he's not a guy that can pump his team up, and I think Brian Kelly is a guy that can do that for the big game. And I think, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Notre Dame won that game. If they won that game, they probably are going to be elevated to number one. I don't think they could beat Alabama. I don't think they could beat Florida. But I think, you know, they could be in the top five. I mean, I think they could beat LSU if LSU went to Notre Dame. What do you think about that, Tex?
Man, I wouldn't, man. My goodness, Notre Dame ain't even a top 10 team. Come on, man.
You don't think so? You don't think? Oh, come on now, Tex. You don't think they're a top 10 team?
Wait. We talking about an eyeball test, right?
Well, yeah.
No, we ain't saying that. We're not saying that they top 10 team if we just going by the eyeball test of who they playing. The most difficult game they played was Stanford at home. BYU. No, wait a second. Before, don't even go there, because at least USC goes on the road and plays opponents, as opposed to Notre Dame going to Ireland to play the Army Reserves. You know what I'm saying? And playing Stanford at home. Come on, man. It's a different kind of athlete down there in Norman, Oklahoma.
Okay, I understand that. But you're basically saying, though, that Notre Dame's just going to get just trounced this weekend, basically. When they get out the tunnel, it's going to be something for them. That's what you're basically saying.
They're about to get drilled, all right?
I don't think so. Callie, what you got to say?
You know what? This team wants to play recent quarterback, but they can't protect the quarterback because of the O-line. So they just go with the athlete, Golson. They are horrible on offense besides that running back. The defense is slow. You just don't notice it when they're playing against Dink and Doink out of the Big Ten. You understand what I'm saying? How many guys are going to the league from Oklahoma? It's going to be a bunch of them.
A whole lot of them.
Well, yeah, exactly. But it's going to be – come on, man. They're about to get drilled. You know,
okay,
man, it's like,
all
right. I mean, Notre Dame fan is like Bears fan, is like Maverick fan sometimes, or
okay.
like Yankees fan. You know, just delusional, man.
All right. Well, I want to direct the conversation somewhere else now. We got Florida and Georgia this weekend. Obviously, let me get my analysis first. I mean, Florida, I think they're a top five team legitimately, particularly on defense. Their defense is not as good as Alabama Tech's. But, you know, I think they can beat Georgia this weekend. I think they will, only because Georgia ain't got no offense, man. That's the problem. I mean, not offense. No, let me take that back. I'm sorry about saying that. Georgia ain't got no defense. Remember when I said Tennessee was running the ball up them 10 straight times? I think it's not going to be like that. Obviously, Georgia's going to scheme for that. But, I mean, they're going to be playing to stop the run for Florida. That's the basic what Georgia's going to do. And I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I got Florida winning this barely winning this game. It'll be like maybe 20-17-ish type of game because Georgia's going to put points on the board. You can't stop them from putting points on the board. So, I want to see what you have to think about that, Callie. What you have to think about that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'd be surprised if Georgia put up a fight. Georgia, you know, they're a bulldog, but they ain't got no teeth, you know, and they haven't bit nobody in years, and you know, it's starting to become a recurring theme with them every year. You know, the same thing. These talented teams that, you know, highly ranked, everybody thinks they're going to do this and that, and they let, you know, they start letting people down, usually, like I say, right around this time every year, you know, and it's been like that, you know, for basically since Rick has been in Georgia. So, I mean, like I said, I'd be surprised if he has this many more years or this less because, you know, like I said, these teams are getting too talented for, you know, for the same result to keep happening over and over again.
You think they would fire him even though he has a very good record there? He has a very good record.
I mean, you got to – at some point, something has to change. You know what I mean? If your school is happy with mediocrity, then, yeah, you can keep going on like that. But, you know, people in Georgia are going to win a championship pretty soon, especially when you got, you know, basically every other school in the SEC winning a national championship. Georgia has as much talent as any of those other schools. And, you know, look what they've done with it. I mean, look, you know, like I say, he's one of the winningest coaches, you know, winning percentage wise of all time, I believe. And look, and he has no national championships to show for it.
Since
2000, you know, they've been at teams back when they had David Green and David Pollock, and them cats back in the early 2000s, and they still was getting, you know, spanked. You know, even when they had AJ Green a couple of years, you know, I mean, they've had players and haven't done nothing about it. You know, no Sean Moreno on all those cats. They don't perform.
What you got to think about the Cali, Mike? Shatow, you got something to say about that?
Well, I just see the score. I thought Georgia lost to Kentucky. I'm just seeing now that they won, but still 29-24 in Kentucky.
It was at Kentucky now. You got to give them credit for that now.
This is a team that, you know, they still haven't won an SEC yet, same as Alba. You know, but I mean, Rick, you know, he's been there. He's been the head coach of Georgia since
2001 almost, so that's about 11, 12 years he's been the head coach. So, I mean, I can see what they're saying. If he don't beat Florida, I think he's going to be out. Because, you know, Georgia was ranked in the top five in the preseason poll. And they're not right now. So, I mean, he got to do something. If he beat Florida, then that talk with Mark Rip, you know, losing his job and all that will be in. But if they lose, it's a wrap. I'll be surprised if he's back.
All right, Tex, what you have to say?
Florida's gonna go ahead and take care of them, man.
So I mean, but the thing is, okay, when you say Florida's gonna take care of them, that means Florida's gonna be undefeated going into Tallahassee. You think Florida can beat Florida State in Tallahassee?
If I was a big man, I'd probably say yeah. I mean, look at
Florida, I don't see that happening.
They're making monumental strides every week on the field.
On the defensive side of the ball, they're making monumental strides. On the defensive side of the ball.
They're very efficient.
That is true. They are very efficient on offense. I agree with that. I want to see what a call. I'm sorry.
College.
Yeah, but they got James Wilder, a five-star recruit, though, man. I mean, he's a man back there. Okay, all right.
He's more of a power back. Thompson was a breakaway threat.
That's true. That is true. Right, I want to hear what this caller has to say real quick. 813, our favorite person.
All right, here we go. Enough with Notre Dame, please. Notre Dame is cream of wheat in an oatmeal world. They are cupcakes in a wedding cake league. They are Reeby when it comes to the Jackson 5. They ain't even in it. Y'all need to let Notre Dame die. They ain't got nothing to do with the top five teams in the NCAA, period. I don't care what nobody's hyping them up to be. Notre Dame sucks.
Okay.
Now, the Florida-Georgia, come on, man. Do we even have to comment on that one? Thank God it's close to Halloween so that the Bulldogs can wear their Winnie costume.
And what school did you go to, Tony Watley?
University of Florida, baby.
I just wanted to put that out there.
Anyway, but, you know, you can go ahead since it's so close to Halloween and let them Bulldogs put on their Winnie suits because you know they're going to get beat down and eat like a hot dog.
Okay.
And finally, that little comment you made right before you came on, put me on, talking about how Florida don't go to Florida State and can't win.
Absolutely,
you need
won't.
To take your glasses off if you can't see that. You need to take the clown glasses you got on.
I do not see that, sir. I don't see that at all. I did not see Florida going on the road and beating Florida State. All of their games have been at home. All the big games have been. I do not see Florida with that offense. Are you telling me they're going to go on the road and beat Florida State with the Florida State defense? I don't see that.
I'm going to say three words to you. Three letters. NC State. That's all I need to say.
They were on the road against NC State. Of course you
did. It don't matter.
Whatever.
NC State. If you can't beat NC State, you are not going to beat the University of Florida this year.
Okay. We'll see. Hold on. I'm going to put you on hold number.
Just like LSU going to bust Alabama.
Okay,
we
and definitely going to see. We're going to see, Tony. Hold on for a second. Put you on hold, yo. Let me get this call in here. 850.
Oh, man. Tony is a trip, boy. Tony is a trip. Hey, look here. All right. First game, Notre Dame, Oklahoma. Like you said, Notre Dame's about to be exposed. Oklahoma has a better defense than people are, you know, some of them for. And Notre Dame pretty much does not have an offense, you know, to pretty much be excited about, whether they have Reeves or Golson as quarterback or whoever they have in the backfield and running back. They can't make big plays. They've pretty much been escaping game after game. Stanford got that touchdown. Michigan gave them 6 turnovers, and they only scored 13 points. So that should tell you about Notre Dame right there.
And it was at home, too.
And they were, yeah, they were at home, too. Now, that Florida-Georgia game. This one, Georgia got to put up or shut up. Because if they get embarrassed in this one, which can happen because I really don't see their defense going against Florida and, you know, making moves on them. They pretty much got embarrassed by South Carolina. They didn't show heart against them. They allowed 24 points to Kentucky. Now, who does that to Kentucky of all teams? Whether it was home, away, in Ireland, Switzerland, or whatever, you don't allow 24 points to Kentucky if you got this so-called good defense. So if that can happen, imagine what the Florida Gators could do against them.
Now, okay. Now, if Florida wins on, and I guess this question is for everybody. I'm going to keep you on hold for this question, James. If Florida wins, that means essentially they're going to go straight through to the SEC championship game. If they beat Florida State or not, it doesn't matter. They're going to the SEC championship game. Do you think Florida could beat an Alabama or an LSU on a neutral field?
Why not? They're an improving ball club. They have the formula to go and win anywhere. Efficient offense, great defense. Great defense travels, even to a new
that, yeah, that's exactly right. Great defense travels. That's why I was arguing with Tony Wiley. Great defense travels. You're right about that. But if you got a horrible offense and you going on the road against a dominant defense like Florida State, you know, I don't see them beating Florida. But that's another conversation itself. Or I don't see them beating LSU or an Alabama on the road. If you're going against a dominant offense, I don't see that. What'd you say?
So Florida's offense is not horrible, though.
Your cause here.
Okay. What you want to say, James? What you got to say?
Yeah, just what he said. Florida's offense is not horrible. They got a great running game. You just don't see, you know, the quarterback making too many passes. It's not that they're, you know, going to be throwing the ball over the field with their running gun. That's not what they do. That's not their M.O. Their M.O. is to control the clock, be sharp with the ball, don't turn the ball over, and play with a good defense. Now, if you can't stop their running game, then, there's nothing to do about it. I mean, you got Alabama that got their good running game. Why can't Florida have theirs?
What I'm saying, but what if they run into a team that can stop the run, like an Alabama, like an LSU, in a neutral field? What could happen? Doesn't the quarterback have to make a play?
Yeah, the quarterback does have to make a play, but, I mean, he's done that before, whether he's done it with his arm or, you know, running the ball.
Yeah, that's true. He has done it before.
So that's one thing. But I did say off top that they won't beat Alabama in Atlanta. They ain't going to beat it. I already favored Alabama in that. But LSU, I don't know, because like you said, you ain't sold on Mettenberger, so I wouldn't sell him again on a neutral field.
I will say, too, if that turns out to be the matchup between Alabama and Florida on neutral field, I probably will definitely go with the edge of going with Alabama, too, with the quarterback play. McCarron has more experience. Driscoll's still young. And I think that's going to come down to, you know, the quarterback play in that one. And then McCarron has experience, and he's a champion, so.
No,
I gotta go with Bama.
Okay, I'm gonna put you on hold real quick, James. We can go to our next topic here. There's another game this weekend. I think a lot of people don't know about. It's kind of a relatively big game. Alabama versus Mississippi State. I mean, you think Mississippi State has a chance?
Come on, man.
Hey, Shottown hasn't been in the top five.
What's the next subject?
I just want to hear what's okay. We'll see. They still 3-0 in the SEC, so in the conference, so we'll see. If Mississippi State, I put them there, they're undefeated, but let's see what they can do.
Mississippi State is not going to win another game this year. Come on, man.
I don't know about that. They can be Ole Miss. All right. Let's go to the next topic here, real quick, before we go to the NFL. I want to go into the West Coast, USC, even though they play Arizona this week. I want to see the big game, obviously, is next week, Oregon Ducks. So what do you expect to happen in that game? Do you think Oregon has to go to USC? They have to go to the Coliseum. That's a big game, national championship implications. What do you expect to happen? Do you think Oregon's going to fall? Is the game going to be close? What do you expect to happen? Let me start with you, Cali Mike.
Oregon's a good team, man. They're a good team, but I noticed something in their playing style. I noticed it last week. You know, in the game they played last week. I mean, they're a good team. They can be beat though, man. I mean, it's not. You know, I don't want to say. You know, too much. You know, I mean, okay. Let's look at their game against Arizona State. They put up 43, but they didn't put up no points in the second half. Zero. You know, they start out fast, and you know, that's a trend that's going on in a couple of different games for them. You know, and they're like I said, they're a very explosive team because they're a very fast team. But I think if you get another team that has team speed like USC that can match them, I think you're going to see a different outcome. I mean, if you look at their offense, they have a very explosive offense. And if Kenyon Barner is running the ball like that, it's hard to stop him. But look at the other facets of their offense. They're not particularly very good anywhere. You know, Mariota, he's a good quarterback, but you know, he's not an elite quarterback. You know, a lot of his throws are short throws and dump offs that end up going to running backs. Or DeAnthony Thomas will end up breaking it for 60 yards. You know, he's very accurate. You know, but I don't know about, you know, him throwing the long ball. I really haven't seen him, you know, getting up there. I don't think they got a receiver that got over 200 yards receiving this year. You know, so I gotta, you know, like I say, I mean, they have a lot of weaknesses. You know, it's like it's hard to describe. You'd have to really watch them very closely. But I've been watching them, and they can be beat. You know, and the way SC was playing last week. I mean, if they can keep that up, you know, it's not going to be a close game in my opinion. But like I said, that's if SC can keep that up. That was against Colorado, you know. But
obviously, whoever wins that game, do you think? Okay, whoever wins that game, are they in the driving seat to get to the national championship game? Because because think about it. If USC beats Oregon, that puts USC up down. I mean, they're jumping in the top five automatically after they beat Oregon, the number two team in the nation. So what I'm saying is that going to propel them up into the national championship game where they don't have to worry about an SEC loss or anything like that, or one loss SEC
path,
team?
In my opinion, the path is set for both of the teams. Like I said, if SC beats Oregon, they're going to jump into the top five. They still got that big Notre Dame game left at the end of the year. And as much as I hate Notre Dame, I'm hoping they whoop Oklahoma, even though I know that ain't going to happen. If they do, that's gonna, like I said, that's set up to whoever win that game going to the national championship. Then they still got the Pac-12 championship, which they could play a top-10 Oregon team again. If Oregon wins, on the other hand, they got everything set up for them to go because, you know, like I said, that's going to solidify their position. They still got Stanford left, and they still got Oregon State, who's a very, very soft team, who I think, like I said, I think can be beaten fairly easy by a top-ranked team. They've been kind of coasting by this year. And, you know, like I said, and then they still have the Pac-12 championship, too. I don't think we're going to see another SEC versus SEC national championship game again.
I don't think so either this year. I don't think so. I think it'll be like you said, it may be Pac-10.
Like I said, really, really, either team, it's sad to say, either team, but plus Notre Dame, too. If Notre Dame finds a way to win out, they're going to go to the national championship for sure. You can bet that. So, you know, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this week. This is going to be a big week in college football, this week and next week.
So, anybody have any other opinions on that?
I think USC goes ahead and beats Oregon also. USC is running the ball well. I think defensively, I think they can disrupt Oregon's tempo, make them pass the ball. I think USC is suited to play any style of offensive football they want to. I think they can control the clock. They can quick strike. I think they can go ahead and beat Oregon. They're a little bit more physical. So I don't see Oregon really just, you know, just hungering down and trying to move USC off the ball. I think that's Trojans' advantage in that game.
All right.
I think it's going to be a competitive game. There's going to be a lot of stakes for both, you know, USC and Oregon. So you won't be surprised if it goes either or, and they lock up again in the Pac-12 championship.
All right. I wanted to get into the topic. You still want to get into that topic, Callie, Mike, about the SEC teams not going on the road?
I mean, it's not even a topic to me. It's the truth. It's, you can't be that fool. I mean, we.
All right. With that said, we're gonna go. Hold on. We gotta go to the callers here, and then we're gonna go to the NFL coverage. Let me go to a caller here first. Our favorite person again, 813.
All right. Bottom line for me is, I've said this since the beginning. I don't think any SEC team is going to make it to the national championship because I think they're all going to have a loss. There can be several different scenarios for that happening, but the way that I see it happening, I see LSU beating Alabama. I see Florida State possibly beating the Gators. That makes all the SEC teams have a loss. And then I see the Gators beating LSU in the national or in the SEC championship, but they're not going to give the Gators a lot of credit for that because LSU will have two losses at that point. So I think that keeps Florida from being in the national championship. Now, on the other side, I see Oklahoma beating Notre Dame. Now, everybody's kissing up on Notre Dame like they've done something, so they keep raising them in the ranks and raising them in the ranks. So when Oklahoma beats Notre Dame, that's going to nullify that Kansas State loss. And when Oklahoma wins their championship for their division, that's going to propel them. Same way with USC and Oregon. USC is going to make up for that loss they had when they beat Oregon, and that's going to propel them. And finally, when you guys keep talking about Oregon, don't forget Oregon State. That is an in-state rival. Oregon State is a great team, and an in-state rival can go any direction. So that's how I see Oklahoma and USC getting to the national championship, is because I think they're going to win against two teams that are going to be in the top five that don't deserve to be in the top five, and that's Notre Dame and Oregon. They're going to be up there because everybody likes those teams. But Oregon's going to lose to USC, and Oklahoma is going to beat Notre Dame, and that's going to propel both of those teams into the national championship, and I think it's going to be Oklahoma against USC.
All right. Thank you. Let me get the next call here, 850.
All right, first off, for Oklahoma to even make it, Kansas State got to lose to somebody, which from this point forward, I just don't see it. Reference to that first game you were talking about, Mississippi State and Alabama, thing about Mississippi State is they do commit, cause a lot of turnovers, and number one in the country in causing turnovers, but we're talking about Alabama here, so Alabama really don't give up the ball. So, and I think it's home game for Alabama, right?
Yes, home game.
All right, so that's an advantage, Alabama. I favor them by at least 10 points. All right, and then the next thing is, I think you're sleeping on that Kansas State-Texas Tech matchup, defense versus defense. But I think if Kansas State pretty much impresses or, you know, beats up on Texas Tech again, they're going to get another couple of first-place votes.
Yeah.
The thing about Oregon and USC, I think it's going to be a close game, but I'm still concerned about USC's depth, and I think people are underselling the front line of Oregon's defensive line and offensive line. So I think with that being said, I think that Oregon can beat them at you know, the L.A. Coliseum and then come around and then beat them at the Pac-12 championship game in December.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm going to put you on hold here. All right. Let's see. So it's going to be an interesting situation. This is going to be a big week in college football. This week and next week, it will be a big weekend in college football. And we will be, you know, covering the games and, you know, posting what we think on Facebook. We got about 37 minutes left in the show. We want to get into the NFL coverage right now. Big controversy. A lot of people here, a lot of the people on the panel want to talk about this, about Cam Newton. You know, he's the Panthers are not doing well this year, and he's getting a lot of heat from the media. Every week, his press conference is sort of being broadcast on national TV. You know, they look at his smirks, they look at his statements, they analyze his statements. And a lot of people are starting to think there's some sort of racial bias. He's always being compared to Vince Young, you know, and he's like, he shouldn't be as good as RG3 or something like that. So I want to know, what's your opinion on, is the criticism of Cam Newton fair, the coverage of him? I want to start with you, Tex.
All right. First of all, I don't, and let's make this clear. There is a bias that exists when it comes to black quarterbacks. No doubt about that. You can't deny it, but in this case, I can't see it. You know, Cam has fumbled away games against Seattle, Dallas, and Atlanta. You know, people want to take his numbers. They want to compare him at this point of last year and go, oh, he's just as productive. No. In the flow of the game, Cam is not being productive. He's turning the ball over and he's getting his team beat. People keep saying, well, oh, he doesn't have such and such. He doesn't have this. He doesn't have that. RG3 and Luck are leading their team. The Colts, like I was telling Mike earlier, the Colts have the worst O-line in the NFL. Even Tannehill is showing up a little bit. You know, Steve Smith had 1,400 yards last year. Stewart, talent-wise, is a top five running back if he's getting 100% of the snaps.
What?
I mean, I don't see the racial deal. I think Cam needs to get into the film room. I think he needs to do his work, and he needs to come out and play. It's always everybody else fault but Cam. You see,
when does
I'm
he ever blame anybody? Hold up. When you say it's everybody else's fault, when is you talking about the media?
Have you listened to his conferences, man?
He said we have to play better, including myself. I remember he said that last week. He said we have to play better, including myself. He's never blamed anybody else, like, you know.
Hold on. Does he mean that? When you see him on the field and then you see him saying that in the press conference, do you think he means that? When he's over there on the sideline pouting, you know.
Yeah, he's blaming himself. I think he's not blaming his team.
What guys mean, anybody can mean anything. I mean, like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, that's true. That's fair.
That whole meaning stuff, you know, because anybody can mean it. I mean, like I said, sometimes, even like I said, you got, you know, and like, you know, like Tex said, me and him talk about this. Yes, the guy that faces that. Cam Newton, I look at the production of all these QBs. All that production has fallen off from last year. You know, there's going to be 6,000 yards. Jeez, that's not happening. Like I said, with a full training camp and with full time to prepare, you notice that stuff's not happening. But nobody's, like I say, Cam Newton. This, like I say, Texas, right? You know, he's a good wide receiver. Those 1,400 yards, Cam. You know, Jonathan is a good wide receiver, but the difference between being talented and productive. And like I say, and you know, this team, they have the number one pick for a reason. They're not a very good team. You know, so I mean, you got to, like I say, you got to buy. You know, because we're halfway. He's calling him a bust already. It's like wow.
I know, man. He's that guy's not a bust. I mean, so, I know.
How come nobody's saying this about Sam Bradford? And you know, and they stink. And they
you know.
And, and, in my opinion, the Rams are a way better team than the Panthers. You know, and but nobody's jumping on his back, and wasn't he number one pick? And like I said, and Cam is a low risk number one pick because of the way the salary structure. Sam Bradford making $60 million.
Well, it's more about his attitude and his approach to the game. Jay Cutler is winning games. People are jumping on Jay Cutler. You see what I'm saying?
Sam Bradford, Matt Stafford, none of them quarterbacks are doing that good this year, and nobody is jumping on them like they're jumping on Cam Newton.
Okay,
that's true.
But do you think
the Lions will be the breakout team this year, and nobody's saying nothing about Matt Stafford?
We're talking about race being involved here. There are other quarterbacks taking more.
It could be race, but it could just be focus. I mean, like I say, it's not. I mean, to me, like I say, you have to have somebody come out and say if racial Warren Moon did this and that. I mean, it could be racial taste, but it's a fact that the media is not jumping on the other quarterbacks, but they're not jumping off Cam Newton. I don't know if it's
exactly.
Race or
not. They're not jumping off Sam Bradford.
We can speculate over race, but we can't. Hold on.
Mark Sanchez, Jay Cutler, they've been tearing white guys up all year in the media.
They're tearing up Mark Sanchez because Tim Tebow is there. And plus that's New York. That's a high profile city. We're talking about the Carolina Panthers.
Okay.
What did you really expect from them?
All right, we got a call here, and he really wants to say something here. You know, it's our favorite person here. 813.
All right, guys, it's like this. This is a circular situation. The press made this man, and now the press is criticizing this man. It's simple. The press is the man. The press is who brought this man to the dance. When he was at Auburn, they're the ones who gave him all of the attention, all of the press, all of the things. They are the ones that made him able to go and get the Heisman. They are the ones that pressed him up and made him the Mr. Superman.
I think we lost him here. Hopefully he'll call back.
It's funny he was saying that. That sounds like another quarterback named people I know.
Here's another call. 850.
All right. The thing about it is that, you know, Cam Newton pretty much has to live up to the expectations of last season where he pretty much threw for 4,000 yards in the first year. Yeah, teams are making their adjustments, but the thing about it is, as far as the team goes, the team is still garbage. I mean, last year he threw for 4,000 yards, but they went, 4-12? And this year they still don't have a defense to speak of, and the running backs are pretty much underperforming. So it's like, well, does everything have to go on Cam Newton? No, not really, because you got to have the other players, like, come up to, you know, whether it was a Cowboy or whatever it is. Now, the thing about the Panthers was that their center pretty much took a full page out of their local paper talking about they're going to go to the Super Bowl this year. So if you're going to say that, you're going to have to – you have your confidence in your team that they're supposed to be performing like a Super Bowl team, and they definitely have not. Now, in reference to Cam Newton himself, he hasn't really been used to all the losing. Like I said, in Auburn, he pretty much was like he had that undefeated season, breakout year, highest control, national championship, you know, had all those wins. Now, he's pretty much like hitting reality here in the pros. Hey, 4-12, 1-5. I haven't seen this in a while. I haven't seen this at all. So he's not used to it.
Newton doesn't have any excuses. You got the Colts with the worst O-line in the league and Reggie Wayne making a transition, Andrew Luck out there winning ball games, RG3 out there winning ball games. You take RG3 away from the
Reggie.
Wait a minute. Come on. Hold on a minute.
Now, you're talking about the Colts. And you're talking about the Redskins. Now, in reference to that, you still got to, you know, think about the whole aspect of it. Would you take, you know, the Redskins coach over the Panthers coach? I know I would in a heartbeat. Would you take the Colts coach over the Panthers coach? Probably I would, too. so you got to now reference to the Redskins. Now they do have that prolific offense with RG3 and with their running back in the backfield, but they still have the worst pass defense pretty much in the NFL. So they even with that, they're still able to make adjustments. And hey, they know they have to score and score and score because they know their weakness. The thing about Carolina is they have no idea what their weakness is. It's actually all across the board. So it's like, what do they have to do in order to adjust to it? You can't make those adjustments. You got to expect that they're going to go 1-5, 1-6, 1-7, 1-8 because they have no idea what they have to do in order to fix their team right now.
Hold on. I got to put you on hold here. I got to get this other caller in, too. All right. 813. You there? Our favorite person.
What's up?
813.
What's up, guys? I'm sorry about that. I got disconnected. But basically, all I was saying is it's very simple. The press made this man. The press hyped this man. The press gave this man a Heisman. The press made him the greatest player in the NFL his first year. And now that he's not living up to what the press has been giving him, the press is criticizing him. I don't think it has anything to do with racism. I think it has to do with the fact that these people are who made him, and now that he's letting them out or letting them down, they're going to criticize him. It's that simple.
Well, I mean, I guess.
You know, with the media today, everybody likes to jump on the next big thing and be the first one to anoint somebody the new best. And, you know, it's like you know, like I said, they were on, new, you know, last year, 4,000 yards and, you know, almost a, you know, 1,000 yards rushing. It's like, but, you know, like I said, it's going to take an adjustment to losing. Like I said, this could just be a sophomore slump. But also, like I say, he has to get some kind of help. He's leading the team in passing and rushing. You know, you can at least get him a running back who can be out there, who can get him.
Yeah,
yards.
The one that's productive, yeah. So, I mean, he's leading the team in
rushing. He still got D'Angelo Williams and Stewart, though.
Okay, but the thing is, I agree with the people that are saying it's coaching. The reason why is because they don't have enough coaches there that's telling this young man, this is a team. It ain't all about you. No matter how good you are, you have people that are being paid millions of dollars to do certain things on this team, and you need to let them do it. You're not the running back. You are the quarterback. Throw the ball and let somebody who's getting paid to run the ball run the ball.
So how do you explain his body language on the sideline? How do you explain dudes celebrating when he's down 28 points or fumbling the game away against Atlanta? Or,
I mean, he's giving the people what they want, Tex. He's giving the people what they want.
Giving the people
what is he supposed to be doing?
Talking about.
What is he supposed to be doing, though? He's supposed to be smiling? Yeah, we just got our butt kicked.
Nobody says smile, but in the thick of the game, go get your Polaroids, pull your wide receivers.
There is no thick in the game, though. Like you said, they're down 28 points. And, you know, I mean, like I say, this, you know, I mean, I don't like the sulky either. But it's like, come on now. That's not the reason why they're doing that bad. That's not the reason why this team is losing because of him sulky. Like I said, that's one another issue.
But at the same time, they are losing because he's not producing. The thing is,
how is he not producing?
He's producing. The team is not winning.
In 2012, athletics is totally different than it was in 98 or whatever. Why? Because individual athletes are now superstar entertainers and superstar movie stars. They're not just athletes. So he can be doing horrible on the football field, but when he comes over on the sideline, he still has to live up to that image that he has built that's made him millions of dollars that ain't got nothing to do with football.
Yeah, but it doesn't really have nothing to do with production. We're talking about production on the team winning and losing. Like I said, those don't affect the team winning or losing.
But what I'm saying is when you're saying he's over there laughing and joking on the sidelines because and he's losing 25 to nothing, he's over on the sidelines laughing and joking because he's still got a persona to uplive. And he's still
got to live up
to a reputation to make that money.
All right, hold on, y'all. We got to one last comment, and we got to move on to the next topic here. We got like 23 minutes left. No last comments. All right.
I think he's having a sophomore slump, but the team is that's more than just Cam Newton. The team is not.
Yeah, it's probably something like that. I mean, you can't. I mean, yeah, the guy's still, like you said, he's leading the team in rushing and passing. Well, obviously, he's going to lead in passing, but he's leading the team in rushing too. I mean, he's still, you know, productive. It's just his team's not winning, and it happens with everybody in the NFL. Even they happen to Peyton Manning. So, I mean, it's just going to be like the.
He's been productive, really.
I mean, he's leading the team in rushing.
Has he not been productive? I mean, he got over 500.
He's not been productive in the wins and loss columns. Not in the wins and loss columns. No, he hasn't been productive. But in terms of, like, statistics, bro.
You guys see him, you see him against Dallas making wild throws.
I was at the Bucks game, so I didn't see him, no.
Played well against Atlanta, but just the mental mistakes, man.
He's been playing good enough to where his team could have won some of them games. Like I said, those are all close games. Like I said, the Panthers are 10 points away from being 5-1 as opposed to 1-5. You know,
okay.
So at some point somebody else has to step up and say, okay, let me help Cam Newton out. Let me play defense. Let me do this. Let me do that. You're losing these 2 or 3 point games.
You see Newton's mental mistakes at the end of the game against Seattle, Dallas.
He's a second-year player, man. He's young, dude. He's a second-year player. He's not a seasoned pro. Come on, man.
All right, we're going to change that. We're going to change the topic up here. Hold up.
Andrew Luck and RG3
are young.
All
right, we're going to change it up here. We're going to talk about the Chicago Bears, Mike, Shottown. We're going to talk about the Chicago Bears. Are they – they're 5-1. So they look pretty good right now. They got the number one ranked defense in the league right now. I mean, are they a top five team? Are they going to make it? Are they a Super Bowl caliber team? The Chicago Bears. I know what you're going to say, Shottown. So we're going to start with you, Cali Mike.
I mean, same old Bears to me. I mean, don't they always got one of the top defenses and always look good? You know, I mean, they gotta win it. I mean, like I said, they're not a bad team. They got all the tools in place. But, you know, I mean, we've seen this, like I said, we've seen this before from the Bears. How many times have we seen them not have a top defense and an okay-looking offense and,
well,
you know,
I mean,
have a good record?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
well,
happened
I mean,
before.
Well, this year you guys.
Well, I
see what you're saying, and I'm going to give my opinion. I think they can make it to the – I'm not saying they're going to make it to the Super Bowl, but – yeah, they're a top five team, yo. I mean,
they very well could make it. They have all the tools in place, but I mean, you gotta, like I said, you gotta perform, man. This is a show me era, man. You gotta show. You can't just keep
they showing so far, man. They performing, but
no,
the difference
they
is
no rings to show for it.
Rings to show for it.
I'll say this though, our offense still haven't reached our peak. We still didn't have that breakout game on offense. That's what I'm still waiting for.
And I think it's gonna happen. I think it's going to happen. They have potential to be the best team in the league because, I mean, when you have Jay Cutler and then you have Brandon Marshall as the number one, you got a defense that plays like that, you know. I mean,
yeah,
you got to put them.
Like I said, they have all the tools, but you got to, you know, they got Matt Forte. You can name all the players, Matt Forte, Alshon Jeffrey, Mike Bush. But, you know, you got to perform. You know, it kind of gets redundant after a while. You know, you gotta get out there and put up or shut up. And they haven't, you know, like I say, for all they've done, they have no ring. So, you know, it is where it is. I'm more all right, concerned.
Man.
I don't know if you're gonna mention it. I'm more concerned about everybody trying to blow up that hit than I'm concerned put on Jay Cutler last week. And act like it was a dirty play. That was a regular sack, and everybody tried to blow it out of proportion.
Cutler didn't say that was a regular. It was just a regular play. He didn't think it was dirty.
All right, well, we're going to talk about Ndamukong Suh in a second. That's what you got on my mind. What you got to say about this topic, Tex?
I think the Bears right now, I mean, they are a top-five team. They are playing defense. I mean, you have to look who they lost to, the Packers, a legitimate offense. Still, they haven't played the meat of their schedule, but, you know, you just play the skid. You can win the games. They still looking suspect on offense to me. They didn't make any mistakes the other night, but they just, it's not, the punch is not there offensively. I still still think it's Green Bay division. They have the best quarterback. They have the best offense.
You think it's Green Bay's division?
Yeah.
I don't think so, man. I think the Bears are going to win that division. I mean, all right. Well, I mean, it's a wait and see, you know. But the way it looks right now, I got the Bears winning that division. And I got Green Bay going to the wild card. But if somebody mentioned Ndamukong Suh, like, what has happened to him? Like, I mean, what do you think has happened to this guy? I mean, he's not the same guy that we saw last year or towards the end of last – I mean, towards the middle of – beginning of last year. He's not like that guy that we expected to see. Do you know, May, what have happened? What has happened? Do you have any opinions on that?
Yeah, I mean,
everybody's looking at the film. He has to develop his pass rush moves. He's kind of one dimensional right now. He just needs to work on developing more pass rush moves. It's not, you know, it's the NFL. It's not, you know, bull rush like it was in Nebraska against double and triple teams and get the sack. You know, he has to just have to develop an array of pass rush moves, and I think he'll be all right. It's just people are figuring it out, you know. In the NFL, they get to know you. So just an adjustment that he has.
I just think that, you know, like I said, he has to get, like, you know, Tech said, yes, how to refine his game. Also, you know, it's hard to play under a microscope, man. You know, like I said, look at what happened with Jay Cutler. Now all of a sudden, you know, it's a dirty play. This and that. Even though quarterback saying it's not a dirty play, his coach is saying it's not a dirty play. But everybody, what is he supposed to do? Kiss him? I mean, so, you know, if you got a guy to get labeled a certain way, it's going to put a bottle on him, you know, because he's going to be thinking, and this is a young guy, you know, he's not a super rich guy, so he's going to be thinking, okay, I have to pay $25,000 for this, that I just this next move that I do, or is this going to give me a 2-game suspension, you know? So, I mean, it's kind of hard when you put this kind of focus on the guy. I mean, everybody's saying he's a dirty player. You know, but, you know, when he was drafted, remember, he was a nice guy, an upstanding man. And, you know, now all of a sudden, a couple of quarterbacks back later, he's the dirtiest player in the NFL. You know, so, it's, you know, you got to, you know, once he learns how to kind of shed that off, you know, like Tech said, expand his game, I still think he's going to be dominant. I mean, like I said, I think he's dominant now. You know, he has to refine his game.
Okay. Okay, we got about 15 minutes left. I wanna quickly go through the subjects before we go to the callers. Right now, who's your NFL MVP right now? If you have to think about somebody that first comes to mind, who's the NFL MVP right now in your opinion? Let me start with you, Cali Mike.
MVP, I have to say Matt Ryan.
Okay. Interesting pick. What about you, Tex? What do you have to think?
I'm gonna go in a different direction. I think Matt Ryan has been great, but their opponent's total record is like a 12 or 13 and like 23 and 24. So these guys are also playing the easiest kid. Matt Ryan has been great, though. I'm going to go with defense. I'm going to say J.J. Watt, man.
Oh, yeah, that's a real game. Yeah, that's a real good pick right there.
Watt is doing everything. This guy is batting balls. He's getting sacks. He's playing the run. I mean, he's damn near unblockable. And to me, he's an MVP.
That's a good point, Tex. J.J. Watt is a beast, man. He's made it so they don't even miss Mario Williams. It's like he wasn't even there. You know, JJ. You know, I think they said he has more passes batted down than most DBs. You know, he's a beast, man.
Yeah. What about what you have to say, Shatown?
Well, y'all, you know, I'm gonna go a different direction too. You know, I had said it from the start of the show. I think MVP. I'm going to go defense saying I think Clay Matthews is defensive MVP. I'm still going to stick with that. I said that from the beginning. On the quarterback side, you know, of course, Mike said Matt Ryan. I'm going to have to go with the quarterback.
who finally now, I mean, of course, got his due even more last year, and he's playing, you know, pretty good for his team.
Hold on, I already know he's going to say.
And they had a chance still. I'm about to say Eli Manning.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I know who Clavel is going to say. I don't even need to worry about that.
Oh, yeah. It's, of course, it's Eli Manning, the best fourth quarter quarterback in the league right now, man. In the league right now. He's the best fourth quarter when the game's on the line. I mean, hey.
Is he a top five quarterback in the league right now? Overall?
Yes, he's a top five quarterback in the league right now, yes. He's not number in the top three, but he's top five, yes. When the game's on the line, I mean, he delivers.
No, not when the game's on the line. I'm talking about overall, is he a top five quarterback?
Yes, he's a top five quarterback, yes.
Okay.
I put him at number five, yes. I take him over Phillip Rivers right now, yes. Right now. Not all that. Right now. You're talking about right now. Who's playing right now? I take him over Phillip Rivers. I take him over Big Ben. I can't really go.
I'm going to do it over Big Ben. Not over Big Ben.
Yeah, I would take him over Matt Ryan. I would.
I got you on Rivers, but not over Big Ben.
I take him over Big Ben. I take him over Matt Ryan, too. I would. I'd take him over Matt Ryan right now.
I don't think Matt Ryan.
I wouldn't take him over.
I don't think Matt Ryan's in the top five. That's my opinion. I don't think.
Yeah, I wouldn't take him. I wouldn't take him over Drew Brees. I wouldn't take him over Aaron Rodgers. But I'd take him over. I put him right there in the league, right behind him. I'd take him over his brother. Well, I can't really cut that far. I don't know.
He's got about top
No, I wouldn't take him over Tom Brady. No. I wouldn't take him over Tom Brady. No. So, but yeah, that's where I'm at right now. Let me hear what the call.
Like I say, it's arguable. I've kind of grown to like Eli. You know, he's really expanding his game. I can't hate him. I really didn't like him when he first came in the league for that stunt that he did. You know, during the draft where he didn't want to go to the Chargers. He went to the Giants, but like I say, he's really expanded his game and became a much better quarter. You know, I like it with any sport when you can see a guy expand their game, and he's really done it. He's a much better quarterback he was than when he first came in this league.
Yeah, yes.
Y'all started last year, coming in and he played because that was all on him.
All right.
The second Super Bowl was on him. The first one, of course, was all about the defense.
All right. Well, let me hear what a caller got to say here. 813, our favorite person.
Okay, we started out talking about the Bears. Green Bay will win that division. The Bears will be a wild card, and they will play either the 49ers or the Falcons in the playoffs, and they will lose. So the Bears are not the team everybody's saying they would be.
Okay,
so,
Tony.
That's the end of all the bear stuff, okay? And MVP goes to Adrian Peterson. Have we forgotten who the Minnesota Vikings were last year? Have we forgotten that their quarterback is a rookie? And have we forgotten that Adrian Peterson tore his ACL, came back, and he will end this year as the top running back in the NFL, and he is the MVP.
All right, Adrian Peterson.
Vikings are 5-2.
I don't care about the record.
Percy Harvin is as valuable to their offense as Adrian Peterson is right now.
Yeah,
I
was thinking about that.
They're going to give it to Adrian because of what he's come back from.
I'm with Tony. I would say AP. AP is still the man.
Yeah, I mean, he's the man.
I ain't going to take nothing away from AP, but, you know, like I said, Percy Harvin putting in work with the quarterback.
Okay, but Percy Harvin is not going to be the number one wide receiver in the NFL at the end of the year. Adrian Peterson will be the number one ranked running back in the NFL at year's end, and he should be MVP.
He's been playing pretty well.
He would have to put up a tremendous season. It's been a long time since we've seen a running back MVP. He'd have to put up a tremendous season.
LT.
Yeah.
Let me check out something real quick. Top three in total yards over the past 3 years: MJD,
Darren Sproles and Percy Hart.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yards from scrimmage. MJD, Darren Sproles, and Percy Hart. Yards
and
from
why do
scrimmage.
You have that? Because Adrian Peterson was out last year.
Nah, you don't have that because Percy Hart is doing everything.
He's a bad He had to do everything because Peterson was gone.
He was gone at the end of the year. Peterson left at the end of the year. He was there for the majority of the year last year.
I see Harvin being the MVP of his team.
Harvin is a lot of people's MVPs thus far. I've heard people talking about the season MVP. I hear people bringing up Harvin.
Yeah, I was thinking about Percy Harvin, too. When I think of that team, I think of Percy Harvin first. But at the same time, Adrian Peterson is being Adrian Peterson. He's back to being Adrian Peterson.
After that injury.
Yeah. Well, I want to slightly change the subject a little bit real quick. A lot of people are starting to think now that A.J. Green is a top five receiver. I don't know what y'all think about that. Like, they think Andre Johnson's no more a top five receiver anymore. They put A.J. Green up in there. You don't think A.J. Green's a top five receiver now?
I mean, this second year, I mean, he's a nice one, but, I mean, I wouldn't – maybe whoever said that Andre Johnson's not a top five receiver is crazy. In terms of production, he's not a top five receiver right now. I don't care about this is his second year. So he could be a top five, but I wouldn't put him there right now.
AJ Green is a top five receiver, and I hear people in the know about players and performance and personnel. Several guys I talk to, they'll swear up and down that A.J. Green is either the best wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are saying now.
This was before the season began, okay?
Yeah, a lot of people are starting to say that.
Right now.
And I put him in the top five right now. I think he's better. I mean, in terms of production, he's better than Andre Johnson. I mean, I'm better
Julio Jones, too.
Well, yeah, I'll give you that now. But I think Julio's going to get in there at some point now. Don't twist it now. I think Julio will get there at some point. I thought it would be this year. He may start to show that towards the end of the year. But, I mean, I think A.J. Green's a better receiver, though. But, I mean, they're right behind each other. You know what I mean? I mean, Julio's a big Calvin Johnson.
If Julio has the physical gifts, I've seen A.J. I saw him first play when he was in high school at Somerset, and he was dominant, man. He's been dominant when he played it. You know, it was like I said, watching him in high school was like watching Randy Moss. You know, he's a different kind of cat, man. You know,
that's what I told my boy that. He said I was crazy.
Yeah. All right. Hold up. Were we going to do this? All right, Tony Wiley, I'm going to have to put you on hold for good, yo.
Can I comment on this?
Oh, comment real quick.
All right, I think it's time to put Johnson out the stud. He's done. I agree that A.J. Green is the man coming up, and if I own Johnson in my fantasy league right now, and if I was a real owner, I'd call him in my office and nigga slap him.
Oh, come on, man. Yeah, yo. All right, man. Appreciate the comment, yo. All right, man. Put you on hold. All right, real quick. 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Let's do our 45-second uninterrupted statement. Let me go first. First of all, Alabama's still number one in the nation. They're going to beat LSU next week. Notre Dame, they have a chance to beat Oklahoma. That's my opinion. A.J. Green, I think, is emerging as a top five receiver. Eli Manning, MVP. Very good games next week. Oregon, USC, Alabama, LSU. That's all I have to say. Go ahead. Shot-town, go.
Well, not much to say. Just saying something well. In college football, it's kind of getting to that time of crunch time more because we're in mid-October now. So, hey, like we were saying, it's either cut up or shut up time. So is big. It can be big these next couple of weeks. And all right. I agree. I think Oklahoma is going to put Notre Dame down pretty good, and I don't think we're going to be hearing much about Notre Dame too much.
All right, man. Callie.
Been an interesting college football season. Like I told everybody, wait a couple of weeks, things will work themselves out. Everybody was hyped up at the beginning of the season. Florida State this, West Virginia that. Where are those schools at now? Geno Smith, he was a Heisman front runner, then he was a number one pick. He was RG3 reincarnated, and the man ain't even dead yet. What was going on? Everybody's fine. Play some teams. Like I keep telling you, everybody has to play. You got to watch these guys play. Folks get too much Facebook memory going on as it happens.
All right. Tex, you got to go real quick. We got like 30 seconds.
I still think Andre Johnson is a top five wideout. The Texans are a running team. The philosophy has changed. They're a running football team.
Right.
AJ Green, top three wideout. OU slams Notre Dame. Yeah, I said it.
You sure did.
All right, man. CMT Firestone, we like thank you for the show coming out. Listen to us on Block Talk Radio. We'll be on Facebook. Peace out.
Hey, Clausel. No, remember, big time. Nobody better not be talking about Mississippi State.
Mississippi State ain't been good since they had Fred Smoot, Big Brother.
Man, I miss that guy.
Do you remember Red Grange, the galloping ghost? He could do a 95 running coast to coast. He had Norm Van Brocklin, a real great player. So swift with his moves that he could be mayor. Why ain't Tittle, Allie Madison? Hey, I remember all those guys from back in the day.
It's the sort of thing, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows. Weekend warriors toe to toe. Football. 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 Football.
Soul timers, do you remember the names like Bronco Nagurski and Nitrate Lane?